Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, which we are recording on the day where two British drivers have made it to the British Grand Prix podium. And with us after a race weekend's absence is Samantha Horvath. Sam, you found yourself some internet?
Funny. Yes, I found internet. I found a new location to live in. And I also was able to watch everything, including last week's race and this week's race. So I'm back. Good to be back. And I'm looking forward to discussing it.
All right. And this week's guest on the podcast is Matteo Poletti from Italy, from Parma, founder of the more than often hilarious meme page, Polmat 16 Racing, both on Instagram and on TikTok. Matteo, what are your first thoughts on the race?
First of all, I'm very happy to be on the podcast. And it's been quite a good race. I think that generally speaking, this season has been quite interesting. If we take out Max, because we have seen a lot of teams on the podium, and also the gaps from one team to another have been quite close. So it's been nice to see the race.
Yes, I agree. It was a really great race. And I think that especially during the back end of the race, after the safety car, that seems to be where a lot of things picked up. And we saw some really great overtakes and things that we'll get into.
All right. So for this weekend, shall we first talk a little bit about the track, Sam? I think you're the one structuring that.
Yes. I guess we can talk a little bit about the track. So Silverstone, it's a track known for its strong chances of safety cars, also its temperamental weather. And of course, the track comes with a wealth of history. Now, it is, I would say actually this weekend in particular, I don't know if it was, but it was one of the most attended race weekends. There was over 480,000 people here this weekend, which was remarkable. It also has two DRS zones and top speeds of 332 kilometers.
Right. Very high speed track. I think it would be good to, what happened in free practice? Was there anything that was worthy of mentioning, Matteo?
I remember seeing like always a mix of weather, a bit of rain, a bit of sun, typical British weather. And Max stopped FP1 and FP2, just like in Austria. And then Charles stopped the FP3, but then Ferrari messed up during the race and then picked up very little points.
Yeah, I think one of the things in free practice that was I don't know if we can call it shocking, but seeing a Williams in the top three for each separate session. So I think Albon had a third fastest time in FP1 and in FP2, and then was second in FP3.
True.
That was a bit of a surprise. But other than that, not extremely exciting. But I think, I like to have, of course, we were talking previously a little bit about sprint weekends and how enjoyable those are. But I was happy actually to have a regular weekend back where we have three practice sessions and actually building up towards a qualifying on the Saturday and then having an actual race on the Sunday. So it was good to have, the regular structure back for this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. And I knew you were going to go in with the Albon for practice because it was really something to see him doing so well, seeing him at the top. We've seen Williams in the last couple of races really start to improve on their top speed. And there's still a lot of question marks, but I think that seeing Alex recently really become more confident in that car and then seeing the practice, you were excited going into qualifying and into the race to think that maybe he was going to finish in the top 10.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Because I also expected a bit more from him. Let's say eighth place is really good from a Williams. But seeing him in the top three in FP1, FP2, and FP3, I was expecting a bit more. And of course, free practice are just free practices. We saw Verstappen like P8 in FP3. So of course, there are some drivers that do the maximum they can in free practice and some other than like manage a bit, sandbag a bit. And still, erasing the points is very good from Albon.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was funny because there was quite a bit of a hype during the free practice sessions. And then when we started with qualifying and we had the, of course, actually Q1 was quite eventful. But then for a long while, up until that very last bit where everybody, you know, where Trek Evolution was very high. But before that, both Williams weren't very high, like neither Albon and Sargeant. I think they also had some lap times to lead it, but they weren't doing very well. So it was a big hype building up to qualifying. And then when we actually had qualifying, it was like dying down a little bit. And it looked like the Williamses were back where they usually are. But actually, then the very last bit of Q1 was quite exciting. I think after Magnussen, his car switched off and we had that red flag and everybody was just waiting to go out for the last 3 minutes. I think those were three very, very eventful minutes, weren't they?
Yeah, I agree.
They were quite intense, that's for sure.
And then Perez not making it out of Q1, I think that was, I guess a bit of a regular deception for him these days.
Yeah, he was, it's unfortunate because ever since Monaco, it seems like he's really been struggling during qualifying. Here's a question that I'll put out to both of you. What do we think are the reasonings as to why we're seeing such a sudden decline with Perez and his performance over the past few race weekends?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, for each one, for each session that he didn't make it out or didn't make it into Q3, I think there's always some circumstances to be mentioned, like this time too, like when the red flag was there and then he was in front of the line to go out, and I think he was waiting there for much longer than the other cars, so his tires were probably a little bit colder than the rest of the cars, so that gave him a disadvantage. But then again, you know, you're still in a Red Bull, and I think that of course, even with circumstances sometimes somewhat alleviating him from his not making it into Q3, I think, well, I don't want to say he should be ashamed of himself, but to a certain extent with the Red Bull seat, I think, I don't think that we can constantly look for excuses. And I just think he's underperforming, and whether it has to do with the pressure that he can't handle, then again, you know, all these drivers are under pressure. So I don't think that's an excuse by itself either. But Matteo, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that apart from Monaco, where he just crashed, he was unlucky in every qualifying. But then you can just put it as bad luck if you manage to be eliminated in a Red Bull by five times in a row. So I think that he shouldn't think about the championship, because he was doing his job very well when he was like the designated number two driver, and he was performing well. Last year, he had a couple of wins. He had many, many podiums because his job was to be the number two driver. Now that he himself and many people believed that he could fight for the championship, the pressure was too much to handle, and he's falling off a bit. And I think that's what a champion doesn't do, because if you're a solid driver, if you're a good driver like Perez, like also Sainz, you perform really well in a midfield car, in a top team car. But when you are asked to win many races in a row, that's where champions really step up.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, I was actually, I second that in terms of what really defines and elevates your skill as a driver is the pressure. I mean, because every one of these drivers are excellent in what they do. There's no doubt about that. But being in the pressure of being the second driver for Red Bull, and obviously you're the second driver to the world champion, you have to be able to put it on every single race weekend. And sometimes you are going to be in a position where you'll be dealt a bad hand. But it's consistently over the last several races, the fact that he hasn't been able to be at the...
Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend. And now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right. All it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum wager and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Tier that's expected, I think, also shows the difference in from being a champion, like you had mentioned, and being just a very good driver.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he must have felt slightly bad for Bottas actually setting a quicker time in Q1, but then not being able to provide a fuel sample and actually therefore thus making it into Q2, but not being able to actually start there. So he started last, right? But because of his time being better in Q1 than Perez's, then Perez was on P16, but he wouldn't have been if Bottas wouldn't have set that time. So it's sometimes just on a knife's edge. It's very little difference. But yeah, I think all three of us were saying, yeah, he didn't do bad at the beginning of the season, but I guess that the pressure he's built on a little bit himself by winning Saudi and by being that good in Baku. So it's somewhat self-inflicted, that pressure. If we look at the other drivers that were previously in Red Bulls, like Gasly and Albon and Ricciardo, I think they left Red Bull I don't think either of those didn't make it into Q3 five consecutive times. So pressure's building even more and more for the next couple of races, I feel.
Yeah, I was reading a stat before, and I read that the previous time where a Red Bull didn't qualify in Q3 for five times in a row was Coulthard in 2007. So that's pretty impressive.
Oh wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pressure's on for Perez. It really is. So I guess we can talk about, in contrast, a team that actually did very well this weekend. Let's start with qualifying, of course, and that was McLaren. It was really great to see them do so well. The upgrades are clearly working for them. Both the drivers had confidence in the car. It was Lando's home race, so obviously it was something that was impressive to see him come into finish with P2, starting at P2 going into the race. But what I felt even more impressive was Piastri, his rookie season, and to be able to compete and come into third was also something that definitely should be mentioned.
Yeah, Norris was extremely close even to getting pole, because that time that Verstappen set first was, I think, a 1:27.0, and then Norris setting at 1:26.9. So if Verstappen wouldn't have set that pole lap, then it would have been Norris on pole, which would have been great to see. But what was definitely, and you're completely right, like with the updates that that Norris had last weekend in Austria and Piastri being quite far away from him on times, it was good to see that now both cars having the upgrades. Actually, they were very close throughout the whole weekend. They were very close to one another. So yeah, those updates definitely working quite well.
Yeah, I agree. We saw that McLaren with Norris was like the third fastest car in Austria with upgrades, but of course Piastri struggled a bit with the old car, and now the car confirmed itself as the second or third fastest car behind Red Bull and maybe also Ferrari in Silverstone. And both Norris and Piastri did extremely well, because it's of course easy to have a good car, but then you have to perform well. And Norris did it as always, and also Piastri as a rookie did very, very well. And so now the question is, if McLaren can continue to to remain the in the top three, top four teams for the rest of the year, or maybe Silverstone is just a one-off.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see, because now actually Aston Martin's dropping off a little bit. I mean, already in qualifying, they were slightly disappointing with Alonso only qualifying ninth, and then Stroll, well, he was slightly unlucky too with Ocon just blocking him there into that last lap that they were going to set, which looked very awkward. But yeah, with Aston Martin dropping off a little bit, it's going to be interesting to see which team's going to be the second fastest car, because it's tight now. It's very tight.
Yeah.
Well, including Alpine as well. You have Alpine this weekend went in and didn't achieve any points during the race, which we'll obviously talk about later. But that's McLaren's biggest competitor right now in the Constructors' Championship. So, like you were saying, Matteo, if this is not a one-off and they actually start remaining more consistent in their performance throughout the rest of the season, could we see them battling more with the Aston Martins going forward? I think that you bring another team into that block, whether it is with Aston Martin, Alpine, hopefully, if they start to improve. You have Ferrari, you have Mercedes, you have a lot more teams battling it at this point for the podium let's be honest, mainly for P2 and P3. But regardless, seeing more teams enter the conversation just makes it that much more exciting as the rest of the season progresses. So, okay, let's move along then. Before we move along, one thing I do want to mention when it comes to McLaren, just in general, what did the two of you think about the livery and also Norris's helmet this weekend?
About Norris's helmet, I didn't like it a lot because the colors were nice, but to see a very big sponsor on the helmet wasn't that great. I mean, it was used also in the 80s, also in the 90s with, let's say, John Player Special, Lotus with Senna, but to see helmets so influenced by sponsors, it's kind of sad, in my opinion. I like, for example, Alonso, because no matter where team, what team he drives, he always has his yellow and blue helmet. But the car was nice. I preferred the Triple Crown livery. But this chrome and papaya livery is better than the current one, in my opinion.
I agree with you there. I definitely think the Triple Crown was my favorite so far this year. Anton, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, the Triple Crown livery definitely was the nicest one I've seen this year. I was actually really hoping that they would do like a full chrome, or let's say a silver, white, red car. I was kind of disappointed to see them blend in so much orange still. I think it would have been good for a one-off to really go back to the colors of the days of old. I also think that the Triple Crown that livery I loved. I would like to see them race the whole year with that. But what are they? Are they going to race the regular livery in Hungary?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, they're going back to the regular one, but I think you're right. It would have been nice to see more of the chrome, and I do agree that the Google ads to me are just a little over the top. But yeah, I think we're going back to their original 2023 livery for Hungary. I don't know if they're making any alterations anymore for the rest of the season, though. I think it was just Silverstone was the last one.
Well, you can leave that up to McLaren in general. I think they switch it up quite often.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we will see another one in like Abu Dhabi, because I don't know. It's just a prediction, because they have been making a one-off in 2021, in 2022. So I don't know.
I don't know if they can even last that long until switching something. But we'll see.
Yeah,
I think it would be good to. I'm very excited to hear from you. What you think? What were your thoughts on the first lap on the race? Actually, with the start there with Norris, Verstappen, and Piastri. How were you looking at that?
I was pretty surprised to see Norris gaining the lead, of course, and I was also surprised to see Piastri fighting with Verstappen, and that was kind of. That was kind of disappointing to see Piastri yielding against Max at Tops and or also before, because I think that Max would have still won, but maybe overtaking two cars would have taken him a bit more laps, so we can have had a bit more fight for the lead. But of course, it was nice to see Lando fighting for the lead. It's also a bit sad to see every driver rightfully not giving much of a fight to Max and preferring to secure P2, because it's what works best for them. But it's also sad because it's sad for us fans.
Yeah, you see the same when Perez is driving through the field when he's starting 15 each race and then, you know, passes by everyone without anybody really putting up a fight because everyone knows.
Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
It's useless to, yeah, I mean, you're just ruining your tires by doing so, but that way we don't see any real racing. So, you know, it's you know, the Red Bull can start somewhere in the middle of the field, but you know that they're just going to drive on, even though it did take Perez quite a bit at the beginning of the race to really move up the ladder. But yeah, you don't see any real fights like some of the other fights that that you see, like when Hamilton meets Alonso on track, they actually fight for a bit, even though that didn't take too long either. But there were some decent fights, and especially, well, I don't want to skip all the way towards the end, but for me, the fight between Norris and Hamilton after the restart for a couple of laps, that was, I think for me, that was the best fighting I've seen this year so far, or at least one of the ones that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was exciting. I mean, we can dive into a little bit about that since we're talking about it. What heightened the intensity was the safety car restart for me, and the fact that it obviously was a questionable strategic call, I feel, putting Norris on hards, because he's coming out on hards. You have Hamilton on softs. You're in a safety car restart. You know that the challenge is going to be now, the pressure is going to be for Norris to act defensively instead of trying to compete with Max. And that puts a lot of pressure on him. And being able to, I agree with you when you say that was one of the best racing we've seen. Although I was on the edge of my seat thinking, because I wanted to see Lando in P2. So watching them battle it out, I was hoping that he was going to be able to have the upper hand there. But also at the same time, you're just so nervous for what the result's going to be. And seeing Hamilton be able to come after him and seeing Lando be able to do a really good job defensively on hards was one of the highlights of the race, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if you think about it, the two best moments of the weekend, or two of the best moments, that is the final part of Q1 and the safety car in the race, came thanks to Magnussen stopping.
Yeah,
that's true. Such a good point. I never thought of that.
Yeah, and actually that safety car flattered Hamilton a little bit, because I was thinking that without that safety car, Piastri might have undercut Norris and we would have seen a fight between the two McLarens for P2, but yeah, the safety car changed things up a little bit, then again also made it more interesting. I think for a couple of drivers, it was a good thing. For others, not so much.
Yeah, I think for Piastri too, he was unlucky in his situation where he was pitted onto hard shortly before the safety car. But even still, the McLarens, what was also impressive was seeing them on hards and still being able to have a strength in their top speed, because shortly after the safety car, he was still maintaining a relatively close pace to Hamilton. So that was something as well to make mention of. But it's going to be interesting. You just touched on Piastri and Norris and seeing them battle. I have a funny feeling that if their consistency in terms of their performance continues, we're likely going to see a few battles and between the two of them. And I would love to see that.
Yeah, I think we'd all love to see that. We'd all love to see that for sure. And that's a good thing of having two good drivers in a car where, you know, there's also a couple of teams where there's quite a bit of distance between the two. But in McLaren, I feel that they are definitely competitive, the two of them.
Now, Zach Brown, actually, just to touch on that with Piastri, Zach Brown at one point just several weeks ago said that he believes Piastri is a future world champion. I mean, it's still early to say, it's early days, but do any of us see that he has what it potentially takes to maybe achieve that?
Yeah, I definitely agree, because talking about his feeder series career, so Formula 4, 3 and 2, he was perfect. He won 3 titles in a row, like Leclerc and Russell. Both of Leclerc and Russell won Formula 3 and Formula 2 in 2 seasons in a row. I don't know about Formula 4, but still, that was a very good achievement. And I think, I think
so did Hülkenberg, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, also, yeah, him as well.
And did Hamilton too?
I don't remember, to be honest. I think so, but I don't remember. I have to check.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, Piastri has shown that he's extremely talented. So I also expect he's going to be. It was just a little bit Zach just mentioning Piastri and not Norris. I think they only differ about a year in age, don't they? But I do agree that Piastri is an amazing talent.
They are like 2 years apart, I think. Norris is born in was born in 99 and Piastri in 2001. So yeah, they're pretty similar, like in age. But of course, Norris has much more experience in Formula One.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say, I think one thing that I find interesting about Piastri is his composure. As a rookie, he seems very, very composed. And I don't know if he really feels that way on the inside, but the way that he projects himself every race weekend is just this quiet confidence and composure. And we were just touching earlier on mentality and being under pressure and seeing a driver at such a young age and being a rookie in this season be able to maintain, at least project that level of composure, makes you believe that maybe when pressure is added onto him, that there's a lot more strength or hope in the fact that he would be able to handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think we all three of us are expecting a lot from him in the next couple of years. I also want to go back because I think, Matteo, you mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, but the Ferraris being quite disappointing in the race, finishing 9th and 10th. And I don't know what happened to Sainz there at the, 10 laps before the end or something when Perez was overtaking him. And then he just, I don't know, he let everyone go past him.
Yeah, he was overtaken by like 4 cars, I think, in one lap. It was Perez, Albon, Leclerc and Gasly. And it was really, really unlucky by him and also by Leclerc, because they weren't doing that bad before the safety car. They were like on a 3 race streak where they were picking up good points, like first Canada, then Austria and then also Silverstone. But then the safety car came in and messed things up, and to go home from Silverstone with just 3 points while McLaren did like 30 points is of course very sad.
But you being Italian, are you a Ferrari fan?
My favorite driver is Hamilton, but my favorite team is Ferrari.
Right. Nice.
Yeah, I think we all have, many of us have a soft spot for Ferrari for sure. And it's like you said, it's sad to see the state of things at this point in time. I mean, I would love to see Leclerc doing better. Sainz has been able to do okay, but this race weekend was tough. And I think, I'm guessing that part of the reason why he was struggling during that period was he was also a driver that was on hards, but it looked like he was really struggling at that point to find grip. Because, like you had said, everybody was just steamrolling past him and capitalizing upon that. Perez was the first one to take advantage of it. It was actually a nice overtake on his part, but between that and then Leclerc, I questioned the early pit stop that they decided to do to Hards for him, when really his main competitor at that point in time was Russell. So that was another thing that was unfortunate to see. But like I said, there's a part of us, I think a lot of us can collectively say that there's a part of us that really would love to see Ferrari doing much better than where they are right now.
So Sam, talking about soft spots, what about your fellow Canadian pushing Gasly on the road?
Okay. He did get a 5-second penalty for that, didn't he?
Yeah,
and I think deservedly so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that we saw a few, I'm trying to think of the right word to say here, but we saw a few things that Stroll was doing this weekend during, at least today on Sunday's race, that seemed like he was, I don't know what was happening, to be honest with you. I think that's the best way for me to say it. I really don't know. It was unfortunate for Gasly. Shortly after that, he actually had to retire. I don't think it was related to that incident, but at the same time, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm not sure whether it was related. It was right after, so I think it must have been.
It very well might have. And poor Gasly, because he seemed to have a string of unfortunate circumstances happen over the last several race weekends. But for Stroll, it seemed like, well, we went back on Aston Martin and the fact that they were very quiet this weekend. We're used to seeing them, and mainly Alonso, of course, but we're used to seeing them do fairly well every weekend for the 2023 season. So to see them a lot more quiet, much more quieter, and then also Stroll, he really just seemed to struggle altogether. So,
yeah, exactly. Talking about Aston Martin, I also think that Stroll has been really bad for Aston Martin this year. And I like him. I also used to defend him when he was attacked by haters. But I think that he didn't capitalize a lot when Aston Martin was the second fastest car by a mile, and Alonso was getting P2 and P3 every race. And now that Aston Martin is back to a higher midfield team, of course, the points that he missed in the early stages are paying off.
Yeah, I think that when you're competing, you're the driver that you are competing against, Alonso. We go back, we've discussed it. That's kind of the running theme, I think, of this conversation that we're having is pressure, right? And you're absolutely right. Stroll has been able, like he has the car, he has the components, but when it really comes down to battling with Alonso and seeing where he performs, he seemed to fall short usually this year. So unfortunately for him, this race weekend, it wasn't great. And we'll see how the rest of this year pans out. I think that for Aston Martin for this weekend, they seem to be stagnant. So I would love to see them do well. I'm sure we can probably all collectively agree that Alonso is going to come back at some point because it's Alonso. But Stroll, still a big question mark, I think. So let's talk a little bit about Hamilton. He started off in P7. He finished on the podium in P3. So it was a great turnaround for him. And he also, in the beginning, he had a situation where he actually fell back. It looks like he ran wide and he missed his braking point in the very first lap of the race. But overall, it was an impressive performance, I think, and a really great turnaround. Matteo, let's start with you. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a great race by Hamilton, and after a poor qualifying and also a poor Austrian GP, I didn't think he would have made the podium today. Mercedes looked pretty quick on race pace on Friday, but of course Friday's race pace simulation and the actual race are two different things, but he did really well. Of course, he's a great driver. Silverstone is always one of his best tracks, and he was also a bit lucky to benefit from the safety car, because, as you said before, we would have probably seen a double McLaren podium without the safety car. But he did a a good comeback anyway.
Is it podium number 14 for him here in Silverstone, isn't it?
Yeah, podium number 14. And I think like the 11th podium in a row in Silverstone.
Incredible.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it also showcases his skill as a driver, like you mentioned. Just the fact that he's a driver that he starts off in P7. Yes, he capitalized on the safety car, but he puts on an impressive performance, and then we factor him into this conversation with his battle on Norris and how it was one of the best overtakes we've seen this season. So I think overall it was a really great race for him and a really great recovery. Anton, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, but I can only repeat what the two of you were saying. I think I mentioned it before, that battle between him and Norris was really great to watch, and they kept it clean because you know, it was really on the edge. I mean, they were very, very close on, and obviously with Hamilton having soft tires and Norris on hards, I would have actually expected the turnout to be different. I thought Hamilton was gonna, you know, especially with DRS getting back after a couple of laps, I think it's after two laps of the safety car, yeah, I was expecting Hamilton to overtake Norris, but yeah, in the end, really great achievement. Like you said, he struggled at the beginning with his with going wide in lap one. So recovering like that, yeah, great race in the end. And yeah, 11 podiums in a row is, I don't know, there's no words for that.
What did the two of you think about the, speaking of Mercedes, about Russell's overtake on Leclerc?
Yeah, he did pretty well. Of course, also Russell is a very, very good driver. And and Mercedes was pretty quick on race pace, so I think that Russell did quite well. Actually, I think P5 was the maximum he could achieve. So P3 and P5 was better than what I predicted for Mercedes before the race.
Russell drove half the race on soft.
Yeah.
Like 30 laps.
Yeah. Which is why already before the safety car, I was wondering whether other teams would like learn from that and go for a one stop strategy and just go from the mediums to the soft, you know, with Russell taking out making it last so long on the softs. But yeah, then again, of course, with the safety car, the decision was a little bit easier for some of the drivers. And then I think Sam, you already touched upon it being questionable for McLaren to put Norris on the hards. I think for those pitting under the safety car, was he the only one going on hards, or were there others?
No, well, Sainz was on hards as well, and we saw obviously him struggle, and Piastri was on hards, but I believe both of them pitted just before the safety car and then remained out there.
Right.
So I think that during the safety car, he was the only driver to go on hards.
Yeah, well, in the end, it wouldn't have mattered because he would never have won the race, but they made it quite an exciting last couple of laps to watch between him and Hamilton.
Well, he said that himself when he was interviewed at the end, and he touched on the fact that the questionable decision of putting him on hards, but at the end he said, "I don't care, I managed to get P2, so fair enough.
All right, so what I would also like to ask the two of you is, what do you think about the calendar that has been announced for next year?
Ooh, yes.
I think that 24 races are way too much, because this year we have, like, I think 22 races with Imola cancellation, and it's already a lot. And to have two more races next year with Imola and China is too much, in my opinion. Then the good part is the step towards regionalization. So they moved Japan at the start of the season and Baku towards the end of September, I think. So that we have a bit of races in Asia, and then in September we have some races Baku, Singapore. Baku and Singapore aren't that close to each other, but it's still better to do like Miami, Spain, Canada, Monza. So yeah, that's a step towards regionalization.
Yeah, I agree with you. From a geographical standpoint, I think, or logistically, it makes more sense, and I'm on the same page as you. I think 24 races is just too much. the strain that you're putting on the drivers, the teams, everybody involved. It already takes a lot to put a race weekend together, let alone doing this for 24 races. It's just, I wonder the toll that it actually takes as a whole to be able to pull that off.
And I find it quite peculiar that we have such a congested calendar, but then there's so much time between Singapore and Austin. There's like 4 weeks, just like a second summer break or something, when you already have so many races that you need to fit on the calendar and you need to... Yeah, I just don't really understand that gap, but maybe there's a good reason for it that I fail to understand.
No, they haven't announced the sprint formats or the sprint layouts for 2024, have they?
Not that I know of.
I think they just labeled the calendar, because then we also factor that in, right? Because a sprint weekend is intense as it is. So if they're going to continue to carry sprints into 2024, and this year they added more, what are they going to do when it comes to 2024? They have 24 races. Then if you add sprints involved in that, how many sprints are they going to add? Which tracks are they going to put it on? It just seems like congested is probably the best word to describe it. It really does seem congested, and it seems incredibly intense.
Yeah, I think I've heard from Domenicali like a couple months ago that the plan is to keep six sprint races in 2024. But then again, it's just a plan. So maybe that will
change. Knowing Formula One, they'll probably change it.
Yeah.
They do like to have quite a few changes, don't they?
Yeah.
And then the question will also be that actually, what will be the format during the sprint races? Are they going to stick with what they're doing now with having a separate sprint shootout? Yes or no? Well, that's a constant discussion too. And there's various opinions. Matteo, what do you think, actually? Would you prefer the sprint format we had last? If we're going to have sprints, like, would you rather have the way we had it last year or how we're doing it now?
I would go for this year's format, because it will take a bit for me to get used to it. But I think that makes more sense, because I think that drivers are more free to risk it on Saturday, knowing that the sprint result isn't the starting grid for Sunday's race. Because last year and also in 2021, we just saw boring sprints, apart from Brazil 2021, where Hamilton was coming back. Because, of course, drivers cared about their starting position on Sunday. But now there are two qualies, so drivers are more free to race, and we can have more fights.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the format this year is a little bit more fine-tuned and gives them the ability to stretch their legs. I just wish that some of the tracks that they've chosen this year for the sprint races, I would have liked to see it in tracks that maybe have more overtaking opportunities. Like I when it came to Baku, it was something that... It's a track that is notorious for not really having a lot of overtaking. So when you add the element of a sprint, you're not really going to see a lot of action, or you would expect not to see a lot of action in that department. So I completely agree with you. I think that the format itself is better. I just hope that going into next year, that the tracks that they do choose for the sprints are going to be catered more towards where you're going to see a lot more racing opportunity.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would also rather see a sprint at Silverstone than at Baku. But I guess it also depends on the weekend. Like, actually, if we would have seen a sprint this weekend with the rain on the Saturday, that would have been, you know, nice, just like we had in Austria. But then again, you know, yeah, weather conditions.
You in the rain, Anton, I tell you, you in the rain. I'll just say this. When we were in Canada, when we were physically in Canada at the race, something that Anton kept on saying was, I hope it rains at least one of the days so that we can see, it would be interesting to see the contrast in the in the different weather and how, and for us visually to see how they perform. And he said that, and Saturday it absolutely downpoured the entire day, and they ended up having to having to stop things short. So yeah, I know you love the rain.
Although
you love that weather element.
Yeah, although I think, you know, we can already have difficulties predicting weather 10 minutes ahead on a track like Silverstone. So to take it into account for the 2024 calendar is going to be tough.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And a place, yeah, with Silverstone, I mean, the weather, like we mentioned, is so temperamental that it would be a really interesting track to add a sprint to. I would love to see a sprint race in Silverstone.
Yeah, same. I agree.
All right, so for the next section, I think we can talk a little bit about forecast scores. But actually, before doing that, I would also like to ask you, Matteo, how did you came up with the idea of starting your page and what are you doing with it? What are your thoughts behind it? If you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I actually started my, let's say, social network journey on YouTube in 2017 and with a YouTube channel. And I was doing some edits of the races, some videos. But then I stopped like a year later because many videos were taken down by phone for copyright. And also it was taking a lot of time. And then so I decided to move to Instagram and in 2018. And there were some months where I didn't know what to post. And I posted a bit of everything. I posted news, memes, everything. And then I noticed that memes were doing much, much better than everything else. So I kept on doing memes. And then, yeah, that's how it went. And I continued to do also something else. And I still do. I do also like driver ratings and other stuff, and I also would love to come back to YouTube with something else, but I don't have the time, so I have to concentrate on one social media, and of course Instagram is doing really well, and I will continue to post on Instagram.
Yeah, I mean you said in terms of time, and that's one thing that I'm very impressed with in terms of what you do is just you're constantly purveying and creating different posts, and they're all relative, they're all well timed, they're consistent, they're witty. I mean, the memes, there's not a single one that I look at that I like posts that you do that I don't think is well timed and just quick witted, and I think that obviously plays a huge role in terms of your success in doing what you do. And like I said, I mean, timing is something that sometimes I look and I go, how is he managing this? Because you have so much, having a small little role that we do in what we put together takes up a lot of time. So I can only imagine the dedication and the consistency, like remaining consistent and putting the effort that you do, to achieve what you have. So it's quite impressive.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I think that I haven't watched an F1 race properly like in 5 years because I always have my TV on, but I'm making memes, and so that's why I'm so quick. But of course, I have to enjoy the race a bit less.
I think what's a nice part, I think I mentioned it also before on one of the other podcasts, but I think what's a nice part is also that from following you, you can't really tell who you're a fan of. And that's, I think, different from quite a lot of other pages where, yeah, if you follow them a little bit, you can pick up quite quickly who they support and who they don't. But you're quite neutral in that. Well, I mean, you make fun of everyone, basically, but that's a...
It's great.
that's a good thing. And I had no idea, actually. You started out on YouTube. That's interesting. But yeah, the copyright there is a little bit, more tough to work with, I guess.
Yeah, I love to make like race edits on YouTube, but of course, it used to take me like 4 or 5 days. I was also much much slower. But when you work like for let's say 3, 4, 5 hours on a video, and then of course you get zero views because FOM takes it down, it's of course sad.
Yeah, that's not very motivating.
Yeah, exactly. And talking about trying to be unbiased with my favorite driver team. Yeah, I agree because I also stopped following a lot of pages that have my favorite driver as their favorite driver, but it's annoying.
Yeah, I think you see that a lot. I think it's tough for people to stick to. I mean, of course, you can have your own opinion. That's beyond any doubt. But yeah, when you're creating a community, I think it works best if you don't try to put, you know, certain people in corners and stuff, because that, yeah, I mean, that just shuns people away from watching you. So yeah, I think all in all, it's been pretty much a success story. When did you start exactly, that you say? I might have missed, but which year?
I started in 2017 on YouTube and in 2018 on Instagram.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, it's been I mean, time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah. It certainly does. And it actually wasn't that easy to pick up some followers, because from 2018 when I opened the page to like 2021, I had like 2,000 followers, and then the page like blew up in a year, and that was cool. But of course, before that, to make memes every day and to see like zero new followers, one new follower, it wasn't that great.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time and dedication, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think it also attributes, if you mentioned that, like over 2 years of you putting content out and not seeing an increase and then all of a sudden seeing a spike, it also shows, attributes to your passion behind doing things like this, because it must be difficult to be able to continue to produce that content and not seeing maybe results that you're hoping for. But even if it's not there, your passion remains the same, which is, I would imagine, part of your driving force to remaining consistent and being able to produce the memes and produce the content that is witty. And regardless, everything that you put together is something that somebody can go back on at some point in time and be able to look at. So
yeah.
I guess in a sense, it all comes around for a full circle for you. That content is still something that's relative for somebody to look at however many months later, or whatever the case may be, when they do decide to start paying attention to it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I never made anything for likes, because of course, I would have given up many, many years ago. And still,
exactly.
And still now, I don't care about the numbers. Like I don't check the likes or the following, because I would post totally different things if I cared about the numbers.
Yeah, because
well, it's good that you didn't give up.
No, and I think that it shows through the content that you produce, right? Because if you are concerned more about the way that people are looking at it or the traction itself, then you would maybe automatically start transitioning into what you believe people would really want to see, and it less becomes about your creativity. Whereas you're able to expand on your own personal creativity, you focus on your passion, and no matter what, you're able to see the results, which is really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Anton, is it ready? Are we ready? Mateo, are you ready for the scores? And we're going to get a little competitive now.
Yeah, I am.
I will forewarn you, I'm normally not that good. Apparently, last week, I will say I did, because Sven had mentioned that maybe I wouldn't listen to the podcast during the competitive part between him and Ajit. I did, in fact, listen, but he is right. I am not usually that good at this. So we'll see how things go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's first go over a couple of this week's stats. So we had 439 people that played, and we had a average score of 38.9, which is, well, only in Monaco and Australia did we have lower average scores. And just to warm up a little bit, how many people do you think predicted this podium?
Judging by your laugh.
Or you hear a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's slow.
I shouldn't have laughed.
Yeah.
Matteo, you go first. What do you think?
The exact podium.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd say like 2.
Sam?
Fair. Okay. I am going to go with 0.
0.
Yeah. There was no one that predicted this podium. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I only went that way because Anton laughed when he said
I gave it away.
I was like, no matter what, it's going to be low.
Yeah, but it was well, I guess it was one of the tougher podiums to predict this year. But in general, like I said, low average score and also relatively low score to take P1. So P1 was won by Ayan Beyazit from Austria. Actually, his cousin was on P10 as well, so they did quite well, both of them. He had a correct P1 with Verstappen, P3 Hamilton, P5 Russell, P6 Perez, and P7 Alonso. So that's quite good. That got him 67 points. And on second place, we had Alexa Valdez from Mexico, scoring 61.3 points. So that was at least one Mexican that finished on P2. She also had a correct P1, correct P3, P5, P7, and she actually had Albon on P8 as well. And she had the fastest lap correct. So then on third place, we have two people. And I congratulate my namesake. So there was somebody from Belarus. His name is Anton Maslakov. And also Shreya Gimiri from Nepal. So those scored 59.3 points. And make it to third place on the podium this weekend. And with that, we move on to looking at the actual league. So that's getting a little bit more tight and more interesting. So Tobias Joly, who has been on first place for a long time now, he scored only 35.1 points. So he sticks on P1, but his lead is shrinking. He was... after Austria, I was still 7.5 points in the lead, but now only 3.6. Filip Hoyek from Lebanon is gating in on him. He scored 39 points this weekend. And on P3 remains Jesus Diaz from Uruguay. He scored 51 points, so a few more. So he's also climbing up and not very far away from P2 anymore. P4 Diana dropped from P4 to P6. Which means that Chipka moves back to P4. And we have a new player on P5, which is Taha Umar from Turkey. So with the scores being relatively low, we don't have a single new score in the high scores for the worldwide high scores and neither for the continents. So we can move straight to looking at how the three of us scored this weekend. And I don't know if you've already looked a little bit at what you predicted. Sam, how well do you think you've done?
I haven't looked at all, so I don't know. I believe I have P1 and P3 correct, but as for the rest, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you do. And you had Norris on P4, so you actually scored some points for Norris finishing in P2, so that's actually quite good. And you also had Albon on P9, so you're scoring 2 points for him as well, which means that you got 49 points this weekend. And that's, you know, given the average of 38.9, that's really good. And you're moving up from P89 to P66.
Nice. Every little bit counts.
Exactly. And Matteo, you and I, we scored very similar points. You scored 35.6. I scored 35.8. you had Verstappen correct and you had Russell correct. Actually you were doing quite well so far. I think you were P24 at the beginning of this weekend, but with scoring only 35, you dropped to 31.
Still nice. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's actually still a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah,
but you were actually after Baku, you were on P2 in the Worldwide League. So you have been, and you've been on P5 like twice, I think, right after the Miami weekend after Spain. So you've been doing quite a bit better than all of us.
Yeah, I remember my P2, but it's still nice. I think that maybe with McLaren upgrades, also with Aston Martin's little downfall, things have been a bit harder to predict.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that's... With
I was going to say that's probably why the average scores were a little bit lower, is because I would imagine, Anton, you would know, but I would imagine that a lot of people are putting faith into Aston Martin, and because of the fact that they didn't do so well and the success of McLaren, that probably plays a huge factor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like Matteo's saying, I think that in the next couple of weeks is going to be tough, because with McLaren being back up there, I mean, where are you going to put them? And then Albon also now making it into the top 10 consistently is also not getting it's getting more difficult. Although we all, I guess, know who we're putting on P1, but for all of the positions behind it, it's really quite tough.
You can't say who we're putting on P1, because if we're talking about everybody, I would exclude Ajit, because Ajit normally puts somebody else on P1 and it's not Max.
Yeah, I think Ajit had a P1, Leclerc, and P2 Sainz, but he did put Norris on P3 actually, so that's quite a good call. Yeah, so I think now we can go towards our quiz, and like you were saying, it's a good point, like how many people are confident with Max there on P1, how many people do the two of you think, and now we're actually going to keep track of the score. So I'm going to ask each one of you how many people you think that had each position correctly predicted, and then the one that gets closer to it gets the point. So the first question is, how many people had predicted Verstappen to win this race? And again, there were 439 people playing this weekend. So out of 439, how many people, Sam, I'm going to ask you first, how many people had a P1 Verstappen?
Okay, I'm going to say 392.
All right, Matteo, what do you think?
I'm going to say 400.
Nice. Matteo takes the round, because there was 405 people who predicted Verstappen to win.
Nice.
Yeah.
So almost everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much almost everybody.
Yeah, that means that there were 34 people who didn't pick Verstappen on. So who do you think, do the people that don't pick Verstappen on P1, who do they go with? What do you think?
I'm going to say, like, in terms of who was the second highest for P1,
yeah,
as
exactly.
a choice?
Yeah, so there's 34 people who don't pick Verstappen on P1. Who do they put on P1?
I'm going to lean towards Hamilton, just because it's Silverstone. So I would say more people would have chose Hamilton as P1.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. There's 14 people who predict Hamilton to win. There was 9 people who predicted Leclerc to win, 7 for Perez, 3 for Sainz, and only a single one for Alonso. We've seen a lot more people predict Alonso previously, so I guess faith in Aston Martin's already dropping a little bit. All right, so P2, Norris. How many people predicted Norris to finish in P2? What do you think? Matteo, you go first this time.
Well, that was a surprise podium. So I'd say 5.
5, all right. Sam?
I am going to go with 4, which is his racing number. Right. Let's go with 4.
Nice. This one goes to Sam. There were 3 people.
Nice.
Oh.
I think that deserves a mention, actually, for those picking
P2,
Norris. So
yeah,
so there was 3 people. It was Farsan Hussain from Pakistan, Ataya Magivo from Indonesia, and Martin Laun from Czech Republic. So congratulations to you 3, because I would never dare to put Norris up there. Maybe in the next couple of races, but I kind of doubt I will.
Oh, that's not nice. I'll put Lando up there. I know it. Sana will. She'll probably
yeah,
put
she
him
had
up
him
on the podium.
Or like you did.
Exactly. Yeah. We have faith.
Yeah, but P2 is high.
And he managed to get it though.
Yeah, true.
So you never know.
All right. Okay. So we move on to Hamilton P3. How many people predicted that, Sam?
Okay. I'm going to say probably a higher number than what I just said. So I'm going to say 212.
Matteo.
Yeah, considering Hamilton is also the second highest predicted P1, I'd say 250.
250. All right. So there was only 77 people, which is quite a bit lower than I would have guessed too. But yeah, only 77. So it goes to Sam, because 212 is closer than 250.
Yeah, but still, I'm actually surprised that that it was 77 people for P3.
Yeah, considering that there were, like you said, 20 people for P1.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, Anton, do you have the number for how many? I may be putting you on the spot. You may not have this number, but do you have the number for how many people chose Hamilton for P2?
Yeah, I do. So that's 72 people.
Okay, so interesting. So, and how many again was it for P1?
Yeah, it was 14. So 14 for P1, 72 for second position, and then 77 for third.
So you have just shy of 200 people, basically, that are deciding that he's going to be on the podium. It's just a question of where they're putting him.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And I suppose that most of the others then go for, yeah, the positions just behind that.
Yeah, exactly. I expected P2 to be lower and P3 to be higher.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and then P4, I guess, without giving away too much, is also a bit of a surprise finish. So I guess we're going to lower numbers again, but you guys tell me, how many had Piastri on fourth?
I go?
Yeah, I think it's your turn first, yeah.
Okay. I'd say two.
That's a good guess. I was going to go with two, too. Okay, so then I'll go one up just in case. I'll say three.
Yeah, there was no one. So.
Oh. But I could see that.
Yeah.
I guess it's fair to ask. And if, you know, if there's two people who have, or three people that have Norris on P2 and no one predicting Piastri, is it even more of a surprise seeing Piastri on P4 than it is to see Norris on P2? Or is that too much to say?
No, I agree. I agree because we've seen Norris picking up P4 a week ago and Piastri finishing outside the points. So fair enough.
Yeah. True.
Yeah,
so we're
absolutely
at 2-2 between the two of you.
Okay.
And we're going to move on to Russell at P5.
Okay, I guess it's my go.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to say 34.
I'd say, let's say 60.
Nice. Very close. It was 62 people. So that round goes to Mateo. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You were only two off.
That was,
you were only two of there, and you were also you were only five off of P1 with Verstappen. No, you're doing well. All right, Perez, you go first. Mateo, Perez on P6.
I'm gonna go with 20.
It's a good guess. I'm trying to decide, should I go above or below? Okay, I'm gonna go just below. I'm gonna do 19.
Nice. That's a good choice because it was only 10 people. So you're gonna get that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people.
But let me ask you this then. Now I'm curious. Okay, so if only 10 chose him there, did the majority of the number for positions for Perez was higher than P7? Did people put more faith in him above that, or was it actually lower? Because obviously of his instability as of recently.
Here I only have the numbers of how many chose him for first, second, and third. But yeah, so there were 7 people who had him on first. There were 202 people who had him on second, because the vast majority of people go with P1 for stop and P2, Perez. And then 102 people had him on P3. So, you know, with those numbers alone, you get to a little over 300. So I guess most people do put him on the podium still.
So most people had faith. So what will be interesting is after Hungary is seeing where everybody is going to be picking him. Are they going to continue to put faith in him, finishing stronger and potentially on the podium? Or given the most recent history and results, is that going to actually drop?
Yeah, you know.
I was one of those people that put him in P2. So I was thinking that maybe he was going to bounce back in Silverstone just because of the track itself is catered to a Red Bull, I would say. But I don't know. Even myself, I'm doubting it going into next week.
So, for example, last week in Austria, I left him out of the top 10, both for the race and the sprint. But then, yeah, he qualifies 15 and he drives back to third. So, you know, I guess even regardless of having bad qualifying, you do you are going to see him end up in the top 10. I guess, yeah, just not every track is that easy to overtake on if you start that far back. But yeah, I mean, it's also tough to imagine he's not going to make Q3 again in Hungary, no?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. All right. So before looking forward to Hungary, let's first see how many people had Alonso on P7. And I'm losing. I think Sam has to start this one, no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're saying Alonso. I'm going to say 33. I don't think a lot of people would have put him in that spot. I think that they would have probably put him higher.
Okay, so I go higher and I say 34.
Again, good decision making because it was 57 people. Ooh. So that point goes to Matteo.
Nice.
Album P8. Matteo.
Considering he scored points in Canada and he finished P11 in Austria, and I also predicted him to score points here. I would say 60.
1-6, you mean, or 60?
60.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Sam.
That's a good guess. I was going to go for something around that too. Okay. I'm going to go above that. I'm going to say 71.
All right, the point goes to Matteo because it was a bit lower. It was 35 people.
No, fair.
Oh, okay. But
I was looking at how many people actually predicted him in the top 10, so also taking the other positions, and then it were 203 people, so that's almost half of everyone predicting. So I think we do see people getting a little bit more confidence in Albon. And I just think that a lot of people putting him on P10 and P9, so actually finishing P8 is relatively high for what people are predicting. But yeah, so still 35 people. So Matteo's actually 5-3 now on points.
Fair.
And we go to the last two.
Like I said, no shocker there. I said that in the beginning.
We go to the last two and then to fastest lap. So first up is Leclerc on P9.
Whose go is it?
I think you.
Is it mine? Okay. I'm going to say this is pretty low. I'm going to go with 15.
I think it's even lower. I'm going to go with 10.
It is indeed even lower than that. It was only 6 people.
Wow.
Fair enough. Yeah, P9 is very low.
So that means it's 6-3, Sam. You can't even win this one anymore.
Anton, just remind me. Actually, but hold on. Can I just say this? In terms of you and I competing every week, I did beat you this week. So at least I won something.
All right, I'll refrain from laughing.
I'll take that.
We're going to move to Sainz on P10. And actually, this one from Matteo first, yeah.
Okay, so I think it must be a similar number to Leclerc, so I go with 5.
Sam?
I'm going to go with 7.
Oh, Sam, you're getting further and further away. No one predicted Sainz to finish P10.
No way.
Yep.
Wow. Ooh. I'm actually surprised, but well, maybe not. Maybe not completely surprised by that, but still. What's even more unfortunate is the fact that ultimately, everyone is probably surprised to see, or didn't expect to see, Ferrari finish where they did this weekend.
Yeah, because indeed.
Yeah, that I think that I would take that out of this result is that nobody would have thought that Sainz would have ended up in 10th, and same with where Leclerc finished. So
yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of Ferrari's results this weekend. And well, there's only one more question left, which is how many people predicted Verstappen to take that fastest lap.
Okay, I think it's, is it my turn?
Yeah, it is your turn.
I don't even know. I haven't been paying attention. I keep on forgetting whose turn it is.
Yeah, same.
Okay, I'm going to go with a high number, of course. Fastest lap, I'm going to say 350.
Matteo.
Yeah, it must be very high, considering more than 400-405 predicted him to win. I think I'm gonna go with 360.
Oh geez, Sam, you were so close, but then Matteo still takes it away because it was 357. You both were very, very close.
Wow. Okay.
Nice.
That's okay. I didn't win this week anyways, so it's fine. But that's at least we were close.
You were very close on that turn for sure. In the end, the score is 8-3. But I won't repeat it too many times, Sam.
That's fine. That's fine. I can hear you laughing over there, Anton. It's fine. Don't worry. We have a lot more race weekends to go and a lot more times for me likely to not do so well. But I have gotten some right on the money, which is good. I'll take that out of anything.
Yeah, so a lot of race weekends still to go, of which the first one is the Hungaroring on the 23rd of July. What are your expectations besides the things that we have already mentioned? Are you looking forward to something specific?
Yeah, I think that the main question point will be if McLaren and Aston Martin will continue their like form. So if McLaren can continue to improve or at least to keep its form, and if Aston Martin can turn it around or it will continue to be outside the top five. And also another question point will be if Ferrari can improve, because I think they have been clearly the second fastest car in both Canada and Austria. And on pure pace, they weren't that far away in Silverstone either. But of course, the result was very disappointing. And also, yeah, let's keep an eye on Williams, because of course it's been 3 weekends in a row with Albon in the top 11. So maybe him and top 10 will be a common occurrence.
I hope so. I would love to see that, honestly. I mean, the closer together it all is, the better for me. I think the better for all of us.
Yeah, I think this weekend coming up is going to be really exciting because there's so many different variables. There's teams that are starting to pick up pace. There are teams that have, or even drivers themselves that have started to become a little more stagnant. So it's going to be really interesting to see where everything shakes up in Hungary. I think you're right, Matteo, seeing Ferrari and in terms of pace, they are one of the top teams. So we can hope that maybe they're going to bounce back next weekend. Seeing McLaren, seeing the confidence now that they have coming out of this weekend, is that going to translate into Hungary? And I would also say Alpine as well. The only reason why I mention Alpine is because last year they did well, right? Ocon did very well in Hungary. So it would be interesting seeing they've had a lot of unfortunate circumstances and just DNFs throughout this season. I would like to hope that we're going to see something better from them going into Hungary. And then, yeah, of course, keeping our eyes on Williams now that they've started to improve. Where are they going to end up next week? So, well, technically not week next week, but 2 weeks from now.
I'm just afraid for Williams because in Hungary there's a lot of slow speed corners and I think that's not really their strength. But I'm crossing my fingers. I'm really hoping that not only Albon, but seeing Sargeant finishing P11 was actually quite tough on him because it would have been nice for him to score his first points. But I guess he's going to wait a little bit longer for that still to happen.
Well, and let's also see where Haas ends up. Hopefully there's. Hopefully they finish the race. I'd like to see both drivers finish the race. So,
yeah, exactly. This weekend they have been overtaken by Williams in the Constructors' Championship, and that's not their fault because they have been very, very unlucky. So, if they can score some points in Hungary, it will be nice.
Yeah, I guess both Haas and AlphaTauri are in a difficult spot at the moment. But let's see for Hungary. New weekend, new chances. and also new chances for all of our predictions. So I think with that, we can conclude this week's episode. Thank you, Sam, for coming back. And Matteo, thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. It was awesome having you.
Thank you. It was very great to be on the podcast.
Absolutely. And don't forget to either follow us on Spotify or any of the podcast listening platforms. You can find us on all the major platforms. And also rate us. It's really great if you are able to go on there and give us a rating, and hopefully a nice one.
All right. Tune in into 2 weeks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.